I'm Brian.
And we're about to talk about Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country.
The Undiscovered Country. All right.
A quote from Shakespeare.
Yep. Well, you know, I mean, there are... So, one of the things that makes me sad about Star Trek is they always quote Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. And it's like, in, what, 300 years, 500 years, however long it's been, there hasn't been a better author
than Shakespeare. I'm sure there has, but, you know, being that this is a
human story,
even though Shakespeare is better than the original Klingon.
And yes, well, you know.
Tuck bok! Tuck bit! And then everybody laughs.
Wow. You know, I always thought you were a little bit of a nerd.
Yeah, well, what can I say?
It's like the pot calling the kettle black.
Yeah, well. At least I know what it means when you say tuck bok, tuck bit.
To be or not to be.
Yeah, exactly.
So I just know that because, you know, we're talking about Shakespeare. Anyway, hey, so Undiscovered Country is a movie. The sixth movie in the Star Trek franchise from 1991.
Yeah.
I did not realize it was that old.
Yeah.
I mean.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we are going backwards after all.
I know we're going backwards as we're doing this, but there is a part of me.
Please go back and listen to all the reviews of all the Star Trek movies in reverse. Yeah. Except for Star Trek Beyond, which falls in there.
Actually, you can listen to that one first.
Yeah,
and then
you
go
could.
Back.
Yeah, honestly, you could.
For some reason, I remember the majority of these movies happening in the 90s, but they almost all happened in the 80s.
Yeah.
Except for this one and the motion picture.
First one I seen in a theater was 4, and that was 1986.
Yeah.
87.
We'll get there. We'll figure it out.
At the beginning, I remember there was the dedication to the shuttle Challenger because it had that accident had happened. And Next Generation like came. Oh, it was 86 because Next Generation came on in 87.
Okay.
And because the VHS, for those who don't know, the video had a preview of the Next Generation on it when it came out on VHS.
Cool. Yeah. All right. So the
can get into that with this because there's crossover.
There is. So the goings on that happen in this movie take place shortly after the event of Star Trek V: The Final Frontier. Will be the next one we do, and it will probably be our shortest review yet. Yeah. Anyway, so what's going on in this one is the Klingon homeworld is essentially running out of air.
Well,
I'll do it this time. Yeah.
So the beginning of the movie opens up with an explosion. You don't know what the explosion is, and then it cuts to the USS Excelsior, now under the command of Captain Sulu, who's been promoted finally. And he's doing his daily captain's log, and all of a sudden, the
captain's log.
Well, he is sitting on his throne while he does his captain's log.
Sorry,
drinking his tea.
It's just the way you said that was such a straight
face.
Isn't Christian Slater in this scene?
Take this very seriously. He's not. He's later on in the
movie. Oh, okay. Sorry.
So the ship starts vibrating violently, and. Literally a shockwave is coming toward the ship, and then after that passes and, you know, they start scanning everything, they find out that the Klingon moon Praxis has exploded. Mm-hmm. That it was a mining facility for the Klingons for their war machine,
right?
Because the Klingons are, you know, warriors, and they had pretty much dug too deep and the moon blew up.
So wait, it was their Rhodey Rhodes?
Rhodey Rhodes. I'm not getting that reference.
Their war machine?
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That was really dumb.
Right. Yeah, there you go.
All right, I'm fired. I'm just going to mute myself for the rest of the episode.
Yeah, I was going to say. There you go. You have fun. Let's do it. So they send out a signal saying, you know, do you need help? What's going on? And literally a Klingon shows up on the screen and says, there's been an incident. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't need any help at this time.
Right.
Jump to a couple weeks later. About a month later, I think it is, like, timeline-wise, the crew of the Enterprise, along with a bunch of Starfleet admirals, are filing into a room, and literally they're told the Klingon homeworld will cease to exist in 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because when the moon exploded, obviously all that crap hit their atmosphere, And when, you know, a moon explodes, your planet's pretty much doomed.
We'll find out at some point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like, obviously there's no explanation in between there of what happened onto the next generation.
Right.
But, so, because of this, the Klingon Chancellor Gorkin has asked Federation for, you know, help. You know, we need to find another homeworld. We need to save our race. And this movie is pretty much, you know, the fall of the Soviet Union had happened. And this movie is the, what would it be, allegory?
Yeah.
The allegory to that.
Okay.
And then from there, we go into the story of
the undiscovered country.
The undiscovered country. So, literally, it is, because it's the whole thing of we don't know what the future is going to be, you know, and Kirk being who Kirk is, his son was killed by Klingons, which David. We'll get to down the line, hates Klingons.
Hates them.
Because of that.
Hates them.
And it's one of those things where you can't hate an entire race because of what one person does. And I think in this movie, he learns that, you know, that all-consuming hate. You know,
well, again, the theme is the goods of the many outweigh the goods of the fewer, the one.
Yeah, the most of the Star Trek movies that were done, this was Nicholas Meyer directed this, and him and Nimoy, and I forget who else, were co-writers on it.
It was Nicholas Meyer and Danny Martin Flynn.
Nimoy was the one who pretty much got in touch with Nicholas Meyer and said, "Let's do this story because I think this is the story that needs to be told." And that after the failure of Final Frontier.
Failure being the final word.
And it was one of those things where it's like, you know, this is probably going to be our last movie too. They realized because Next Generation was so successful that this was probably going to be the last of the, you know, original crew's track.
Sure.
So they wanted to go out on a good note, go out on the note where the Klingons have always been the Soviet Union. So let's, you know, finally end that. We know on the Next Generation that the Klingons and the Federation are allies.
Right.
So let's show where that started at.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just shows where some people are afraid of what's going to happen when that type of stuff does happen. I think it happened in the real world.
Yeah. Too. I mean, there's that old guard who very much Kirk and his team are the you know, old guard. And, you know, they were on the frontier of space for so long.
They've dealt with Klingons most of their career.
Yeah, the human looking ones from Enterprise.
Yeah.
So really.
Yeah. So from there it's pretty much meet up with Chancellor Gorkin and escort him back to Earth for, you know, a conference, and you know, because of these people who don't want the peace. Gorkin dies and Kirk and McCoy are arrested and adventure ensues. And that. So excitement. You thought this movie came out a lot more recently?
No, I just thought it was later in the 90s. Okay. Like I knew it was the 90s and everything. I just I mean, time is flying by in my old age.
Wow.
Now, I'm going to say
younger
this.
Than me.
I know. I really enjoyed this one.
Yeah.
I remember really enjoying it when
this
I saw it.
This is a rewatchable Trek movie.
I've rewatched it a few times. Yeah. I think this is probably my favorite Kirk in movie.
Okay.
Because he's realizing for the first time he has limitations.
In his older age.
But at the same time, it's not like he's hanging up the tricorder and getting the futuristic rascal and retiring.
Well, that's the whole point of this story is that they are, when their mission's over, they are retiring.
But I mean, he's still like, even though he knows everything that's going on, like he's still fighting.
Yeah.
And you know, he's great in this. This is probably some of the best DeForest Kelly, Dr. McCoy stuff. Like, to the point where this most recent one beyond, like Carl Urban, like the two roles in these two particular movies
I really wish that of any of the actors, and you know, most of them are still alive, but I wish if any of the ones who have passed before the new Trek universe was created, I wish DeForest Kelly would have been able to see it and been able to see Carl Urban do him. Well, because Carl Urban is doing DeForest Kelly as McCoy.
Well, I'm thinking, though, that maybe that wouldn't have been possible because he's obviously doing some sort of voodoo black magic to channel DeForest Kelly. So
true,
it's the spirit in him. No, but I mean, this is another like really good cast. I mean,
this cast of, you know, besides Ricardo Montalban coming back as Khan, mm-hmm. I think this cast was the most solid guest mm-hmm. cast that they had ever had.
Well, Christopher Plummer.
Christopher Plummer as General Chang. Mm-hmm. David Warner as Chancellor Gorkin. Mm-hmm. Michael Dorn shows up as Colonel Worf.
Yeah.
Who they, you know, eventually said was Worf's grandfather.
Right. Yeah, Kim Cattrall.
Yeah, Kim Cattrall. Valeris. Brock yep. Peters came back as mm-hmm. Admiral Cartwright, who he had been in Star Trek right. IV.
Christian Slater as some random yeoman.
Oh, yeah. Christian Slater, the reason why Christian Slater was in this movie was because he was a Star Trek fan.
Yeah.
And he just happened to be in Paramount Studios when they were shooting that, and he came on set and he asked if he could be in a scene. And Nicholas Meyer was nice enough to just say, yeah, we've got something for you. And that, and it's literally, he's in shadow until the last minute. And yeah. then you see him, you're like, oh, wow.
I remember recognizing the voice yeah. just because he has such, you know, that
Jack Nicholson
voice.
Type yeah. note to his voice.
Well, I remember one time, I read an article about him where, or no, I was listening to a podcast that he was on, and he had talked about how, he didn't get a part for something. I think he was trying to like for like with Jack Nicholson yeah. or whatever. And they're like, well, you're not Jack Nicholson enough okay. or you just don't really. And he's like, so I kind of just with Heather's yeah. went with it. Went, like we're all Jack, in Jack yeah. Nicholson. And like,
I could see that.
Yeah. I don't think he's ever like gotten out of that. So.
Yeah.
God, he's so good on Mr. Robot. So good.
He's evolved. I mean, you know, even as early as Robin Hood, he wasn't mm-hmm. playing that Jack Nicholson no. type character anymore.
No.
And I mean, what Iman shows up in
yep.
this. And she
David
is
Bowie's
great.
Wife.
She is
so
great
good.
In this
yeah.
movie. I mean, you know, for the small role that she has, she's just like, you know, one of those standout characters
you know,
that you think about.
It's not necessarily a small role.
Yeah.
But like, it's one of those ones where this movie would not have been as good without what
right.
happened with her role. With
right.
And her being a shapeshifter and everything
yep.
is just wonderful.
Have you ever seen the uncut version of this?
I don't think I have.
With Rene Auberjonois, who played Odo on Deep Space Nine, shows up as a character called Colonel West,
okay.
who's part of the military arm of Starfleet.
Okay.
And has an interesting twist at the end.
It's her?
No, no. It's literally that Klingon that tries to assassinate mm-hmm. the president is him. Because like you hear it in the regular cut, the one mm-hmm. that's on Netflix and Amazon and that. Colonel Worf says, that's not Klingon blood.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's it cuts. So in the original, and the one that's like on the DVD and that, they literally pull the mask off of him and it's him dead. And there's all this red blood all over the place because they reveal
yeah.
that, you know, Klingon blood is Pepto-Bismol.
Yeah, it is Pepto-Bismol. So
later on, their blood must... It's the thing where it's like some of the continuity stuff is so funny because like Worf bled red.
Right.
And then these Klingons bled Pepto-Bismol.
Well, you know, they had a bigger budget than,
yeah,
you know,
right.
a syndicated TV show.
True.
So, because it's not like, The Next Generation was a network show.
No.
It was syndicated.
Right.
You know, I mean,
yeah.
it was.
They just were running on a Paramount budget.
It was that and like time tracks and that kind of stuff
yeah.
that, you know.
Yeah. But
Pacific Blue.
I think that like it was fun for this movie because they did do a lot of tie-in. Like, you know, Colonel Worf obviously was a tie-in, but
right.
Leonard Nimoy showed up
mm-hmm.
on The Next Generation
yeah.
and it tied to mm-hmm. this. Like, he referenced stuff that happened
mm-hmm.
in this movie, and the movie hadn't come out yet.
Right.
So it was, like, fun for, you know, a fan like me watching Nimoy, and he's, like, says stuff.
Right.
And you're like, ooh, what's going to happen? Like, who, you know, somebody going to die? Because he kind of alluded to, you know, bad things happening to the crew. And that, and you know, you go into the movie expecting like craziness, and there is a lot of craziness,
mm-hmm.
but it was just a fun movie to, you know, watch. The Nicholas Meyer group of movies,
mm-hmm.
I think, are the best of the original Trek
yeah.
movies, which, you know, that's Star Trek II, Star Trek IV, Star Trek VI,
mm-hmm. the even number ones.
Yeah, and I look forward to, you know, Star Trek Discovery because Nicholas Meyer is on the writing
staff.
He's
okay.
he's part of the writing staff. So it's like I'm sure that it'll be pretty solid just because of that fact.
Okay.
Yeah, Nicholas Meyer, I mean, he wrote an autobiography and talked about a lot about Trek and, you know, his involvement in that. And it was, you know, I don't think he was a fan, but I think he just enjoyed doing stories with that universe.
I can see that. I mean, it's a fun universe to play in.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, for a movie that in 1991 had a $27 million budget.
Yeah.
I mean, it had some great effects. The magnetic boots.
Well, it's Industrial Light and Magic, yeah. So it's like, you know, a lot of those effects were mm-hmm. because of them. I mean, the battle at the end is probably one of the best space battles
yeah.
in a movie.
And which they reused that scene in yeah. later Star
the
Trek.
Klingon yeah. ship blowing up, yeah. But I mean, of, you know, all the space battles you've seen in movies and TV shows, three ships and that
oh, yeah.
space battle is like really awesome.
Yeah.
And I think Christopher Plummer's performance is part of the reason why, because he's mm-hmm. continuously quoting just Shakespeare
and, the entire yeah. time. I mean,
yeah, and it's just, you know, it's fun to find out that Spock is related to Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yeah.
And that just by quoting that mm-hmm. line from Sherlock Holmes.
There's definitely like a very, like with Christopher Plummer's Klingon and Khan, there's a kindredness,
yeah.
you know?
And he's a very unique looking Klingon.
Well, and I was reading that he didn't want to have to do a lot of makeup.
Right.
So he asked to be more human looking.
Yeah.
Because his brow is very, it protrudes,
very,
but not a lot.
It's very subdued.
But,
And he has the ponytail
right.
in the back. And it's like, you're like, okay, what's this guy been through that mm-hmm. he has a eye patch screwed into his head?
Yeah, screwed into his face.
I mean, he's got scars all over. Like, mm-hmm. pretty much they did, like, these real light scarring mm-hmm. to his, like, brow. And then he has a small ponytail in the back. And you're like, what has he been through? It's like, where's this guy been the whole time Star Trek's been around that we didn't have him?
Dothraki Horde.
Yeah, exactly.
But, and, you know, someone else we forgot to talk about was Kurtwood Smith as the president of the Federation.
All a bunch of assholes.
Red Foreman himself looking yeah. to put some boots up some asses.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, I'm trying to think of how I want to ask you this.
Yeah.
How in, like, just kind of the overall aspect of Star Trek, this one felt very cinematic,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Like, the ones that are typically good are the ones that feel like more like episodes.
Yeah.
And just in my opinion. And,
yeah, like
and,
an extra, you know, long episode.
Yeah, like Beyond felt like yeah. an episode. First
Trek
Contact.
Is literally a right. continuation of an episode.
Right.
And does right. feel like an episode.
First Contact felt like an episode.
Yeah.
This one, four. You know, mm-hmm. they those
even
are...
three. Three is, you know, one where I'd say...
Yeah.
Because I feel like 2, 3, and 4... are a trilogy.
Yes.
And then 6 is the answer to that trilogy.
The epilogue.
Yeah, yeah, the epilogue. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. No, because, and so I say this because, like, this one felt very, very cinematic,
yeah.
right? This was a movie.
Yeah.
It had, you know, it had a good budget. It made almost $100 million in the theater.
Everybody was on their game. Like, literally every one of the original
yeah.
crew was on their game.
Yeah.
Even if they were like playing, I mean, you know, obviously George Takei and mm-hmm. Walter Koenig and Nichelle Nichols and James Doohan played smaller roles.
They didn't have
movies.
A lot
so, yeah,
to do.
They didn't have a lot to do. But in this movie, they all stand out.
Oh, yeah.
And they have small parts, but they stand out.
Like at the dinner party, like James
yeah.
Doohan is like just Scotty's grumbling the
yeah.
entire time.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have.
Well, yep. even, like, the part, there's like, just that one-off scene where he's sitting in the lounge, and it's what you would expect Scotty to be doing. He's sitting in the lounge, drinking coffee, and reading tech manuals.
Right.
And it's like, how much more Scotty could you get? It's like, you hit that right on the mark.
Escaping from the Enterprise in a photon torpedo.
Yeah. 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 That's a good Scotty
that
moment.
That was a pretty good Scotty moment. No, I felt like it was a really good cohesive story.
Yeah.
When I look back at, like, so later Trek things that have happened, from Enterprise when they're on the Andorian, or when they're with the Andorians and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like that's like
yeah.
kind of the kindred
yeah,
to this
it's literally
story.
Like
and
the whole thing where, like I said, you know, by the 87 years later that the Klingons and the Federation work together.
Right.
You know, they're not like friends, but they're allies.
Right.
But for this part. Story, like, is pretty much, you know, where we're going with that.
Right.
Where it started. Mm-hmm. This is where it started, and this is how it happens.
Yeah, it's a great first chapter. And like you were saying, with Next Generation picking up steam the way it did.
Yeah.
And, you know, having those Klingons that look nothing like the 1960s Klingons, right? Like, this was a good, like, antecedent to that to get that ball rolling and be like, hey, look, you know, we've had these ridgeback Klingons for a few movies now, and we know at some point, like you said, there's an uneasy piece.
Right.
But now it's, you know, oh, hey, we had to put out that olive branch somehow, sometime.
Right.
This is that story.
Yeah. Now, I think, like, later on Next Generation, they could have explained the homeworld, the Klingon, what had happened, you know, down that line, just because I think that was the problem that the storytellers had, mm-hmm. is you don't reference the history.
Right.
And it's like, the history's there. We talk about, you know, our founders.
Right.
And our founders are 200 years in the grave.
There's a musical going on right now on Broadway about Alexander Hamilton.
Yeah, and I'm like, you know they didn't acknowledge that, but I think that, you know, in a way, looking at the Klingon homeworld that's in Next Generation, it's still that Klingon homeworld because it rains all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's never stopped raining in the Klingon capital city, and I think that they acknowledged that in a way.
Because of the
quote-unquote nuclear winter. And so, it's like, you know, yeah, I would have liked to seen a little bit more of, I think that, you know, we've talked about Star Trek Discovery on the show.
Yeah.
And we've talked about all the other Star Trek spinoffs. I think I would have liked to seen a Star Trek spinoff that would have been Klingons.
Yeah.
Like, focusing on a Klingon ship, or focusing on something with the Klingon homeworld, or even, like, just a TV movie.
Yeah.
And I don't think that Paramount or CBS at this point takes enough advantage of what they've got.
Yeah.
You know, like, Disney is taking advantage of Star Wars as much as possible.
As much as they possibly can.
It's one of those things where I don't think that Paramount or CBS is willing to throw the money out there to do, you know, a movie with just Klingons, or a story where, you know, they show the history of something, or, you know. And yeah, Star Trek Discovery may do that. But this was the start of history that we already seen on the Next Generation.
Right.
And I mean, you know, just the references to stuff. And like I said, Colonel Worf was great.
Yeah.
And that.
Good for you, Michael Dorn. Good for you.
Yeah, I think, like, Michael Dorn's had the most screen time in Star Trek history at this point.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, because he was on Next Generation. He was in
Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. He was on most of the movies.
Yeah.
For the, you know, recent.
Yeah.
I've asked you before, have you ever watched Ted 2?
I haven't watched it yet.
There's a great scene at New York Comic Con with Michael Dorn.
Oh, yeah.
And Patrick Warburton.
Oh, nice.
Cosplaying.
Okay.
And it's exactly what you think it is.
Yeah.
But, like, it's just this awesome surprise moment.
Okay.
Because, I mean, he's, like, really, like, thinned out. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
he's,
yeah,
like, super lean now. Yeah. And, like, to see him as Worf, like, lean, it's like, now that's a Worf I don't want to mess with.
He's cool. I got to meet him a couple times, and he's real mellow. And it's like, you know, man, for you playing that character who was, like, you know, who what he was, it's like, to be that mellow, it's like, okay.
Yeah, he's a badass. Yeah. Worf, not. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure Michael Dorn's a badass too, but. All right. So, all in all, how many? What's your rating for this one? Like, where does this stand in the pantheon of your Star Trek love?
I forget what my ranking was. I need to find that list. But I think this, like, is in the top part of the list.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely going to say it's in the top part of the list.
And this is, like, I think, there's 13 movies now.
13, yeah.
This is probably, for me, right around number 5, number 6. Yeah. Like, it's like probably, I said, like, top
that mid-range.
So,
I definitely, like I said, I'd recommend watching the director's cut version.
Yeah, I definitely, I'm gonna track that down for sure.
I didn't know that it existed, and I bought it, and I'm watching it, and I'm going, wait a minute, I don't remember this. Because there's literally a scene where they're planning to rescue Kirk and McCoy, and it's Rene Auberjonois playing Odo, but playing a human version of him, because he's got that staunch voice, and he comes in, and we could bomb the hell out of him, and blah, blah, blah.
He was the one who had to turn in the bucket of water,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, just
the changeling.
Yeah, yeah. Getting my stuff right here.
But yeah, I mean, that's what it's like. It's funny that, you know, the amount of actors they reused.
Oh, yeah.
And but, you know, like the, what, John Shuck shows back up. He mm-hmm. was in Star Trek IV. He comes back as the Klingon ambassador.
Yeah.
And it's like, that. He's one of those ones where they actually showed time had passed because his hair had grayed.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's cool. It's like, you know, thanks for that little bit of, yeah, time has passed.
The Kangaroo Court trial with McCoy and Kirk is one of my favorite parts because they have this translator device that works about 30 seconds after what has been said. And by that point, they've already moved on to something else. And, you know, it's this big, like, ice wall full of, or not ice wall, but like dirty looking wall full of, like, just Klingons, like, oh, blah, 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 you know.
And they did a great, like, rendition of that for Enterprise when they put Archer on trial.
Yeah, when Archer went
but
on trial.
But it's fun in that scene because obviously Christopher Plummer as Chang is prosecuting,
right,
and Colonel Worf is defending,
right,
and at one point Chang is like going on about something and he literally says to Kirk, do not wait for the translation, you know what I said.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, Kirk would understand some Klingon, right, just like, you know, anybody understands some Spanish or mm-hmm. you know. And I'm like, huh, that makes a lot of sense, because you never think about it up until that point that Kirk would understand some Klingon.
Yeah.
And then it's like, yeah, that's cool.
What is it? Know thine enemy.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And the funny thing is the translator that's in that movie is Captain Claw from Star Trek V.
Okay.
They had asked him to come back and just play a small role.
Cool.
And it's like, okay, cool.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to, like, kind of the pin being stuck into the Klingons for a while.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like this was a, you know, and I know we got them more in, like, you know, the later on with Kirk or with Picard and those guys in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Klingons with generations have always been the main foil.
Right, but, like, I felt like this was a great, like, kind of pin for them to be like, okay, we're gonna stick a pin in this and we're gonna come back and we're gonna revisit this later. Yeah. Right? Like, let's kind of keep that pin there. Like, you know, especially with Discovery around.
Well, and I think that, you know, Nicholas Meyer and Denny Martin Flynn being, you know, the good writers that they were, acknowledged that, you know, even though the Klingons and the humans, the Klingons and the Federation had their differences, they still were more alike than they thought.
Right.
And the only way they realized they were so much alike was having the conspiracy of all these people from the mm-hmm. Romulan Empire to the Klingon Empire
mm-hmm.
to the Federation working together
right.
to not bring them together.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I think that's where Kirk and Spock and the crew came into that realization that, you know, we're more alike than we think we are.
Yeah.
And that's where his whole speech is at the end. Like, you know, we all can work together.
I liken it to the speech at the end of Rocky IV.
Yeah.
If yous can change, then I can change.
Nice.
Anybody's can change.
Nice.
Adrian.
You had to go there.
I did. I totally had to go there.
You had to do the other four.
Hey, anytime I can talk about Rocky IV, I'm going to.
You're never allowed to talk about Rocky IV.
Come on. Oh, with everything that's happened with the Olympics and the Russian team. Oh. Whew.
I don't know.
Anyway. All right. So yeah, like I said, for me, this is definitely a top five, top six Star Trek movie.
This is on the better half.
Definitely
the better side of the fence.
This is with the bell curve, like where they start to go downhill.
Okay.
So like after this one is like five, Generations.
Oh wow, okay.
Nemesis. So this was on like for me, this is like after this one is where they kind of where I'm like, you know, I'm like,
I have to find my list. We'll just publish the list.
Yeah, we'll put it up. We'll put it in the sidebar or something.
Yeah.
But all right, well, cool, man.
Yeah, this.
Anything else you want to put into this one?
No, just check it out.
Yeah, it's definitely worth a watch. I think it's not on Netflix.
Prime.
Yeah, so if it's on Netflix, it's probably on Hulu as well. If you have a Hulu subscription, Netflix. I don't know what Netflix is, but it might still be. They're kind of all split up right now.
Amazon Prime, I think, is the one where most of the originals are right now.
Because they were all on Netflix.
Yeah.
And I kind of went through and binged watched a bunch of them because we've been talking about this stuff.
Right.
But yeah.
I own all of them, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not on Blu-ray yet, but I own all.
When streaming services came out, I kind of purged a lot of stuff.
Well, so. There's certain things I'll have in my collection forever.
So. I know. All right, guys. Well, we're the Infamous Podcast. You can find us online at infamouspodcast.com or Infamous Podcast on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And if you want to email us, it's contact@infamouspodcast.com. So let us know what you think of this particular Star Trek movie. Yeah, anything else that we need to talk about? If you like what you hear and you listen to us on Google, Stitcher, or
iTunes. Why did you just become a mustache-twirling villain? If you like what you hear,
Mr. Bond.
Give us 5 stars on everything that you listen to. Thank you.
That's a very good German accent.
Thank you very much.
Duh. Now you're making this weird, like, face. It's... And you don't have a beard right now? It's really creepy.
Are you frightened of me?
Very.
Mine have?
All right, guys.
Dr. Jones?
You can find Johnny online at Johnny Podorf on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. I'm online at Brian Tudor on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat and stuff. Anyway.
And stuff. Is there a website called Stuff?
Yes.
That you're on?
Yeah.
Spell stuff.
And stuff. She's not a thinker. She's a speller. All right, guys. On that note, this has been our review of Undiscovered Country. Stay tuned. Star Trek 5
will probably be in a couple weeks because we are behind.
We're way behind, and it's my fault.
It should only be about maybe 10 or 15 minutes because I will shred it.
I may not talk during that one at all. That might just be all you.
There's only one part of that movie I like. No. Two parts of that movie I like.
Yeah, there's no parts of that movie I like. So, alright guys, that's to look forward to.
Alright.
Alright, later.